Greetings and salutations, one and all. Welcome to today's episode of Risk and Reels. I am, as always, your host, Jeffrey Wheatman, and I am very excited. I'm actually always excited about these podcasts recording. I love talking to friends, new friends, old friends, friends with different perspectives, backgrounds, and Joe definitely qualifies for a handful of those. So I am very excited. Our guest today is Joe Head, who is a CISO coach and mentor. Joe and I met on LinkedIn a few months ago. Joe posted something that was maybe a little controversial, which I'm good with. And we had like a really nice kind of back and forth. And one of the things that Joe and I really kind of latched onto is it's okay to disagree. It's okay to have differing opinions as long as we are civil about it. So Joe, say hello to our listeners.
Yeah. Hi everyone. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. It was really interesting, isn't it? Like how I think we literally started because we had a disagreement on something, but in the world of the internet, isn't it funny that so many people disagree and then they just immediately can't be friends or they hate each other? Whereas we were like, yeah, we disagree, but it doesn't mean we can't have a chat, right?
That's actually why LinkedIn is really the only social media that I am using these days. I always share. I was very active on Facebook, and then about a year and a half ago, my wife came out on the terrace and saw me typing furiously. And she's like, "What you doing?" And I went, "I'm educating stupid people on Facebook." And she said, "I think you need to not do that anymore." And you know, now I jump in like every 3 months and look for pictures of cats. And I think the one cool thing about LinkedIn is, sure, there's places you can go that I think are super toxic, but I think there's also a lot of positivity and a lot of support. You know, one of the things I've spoken with a lot of people about, and I think we'll get to this later, there's an awful lot of gatekeeping going on in our industry, which I think is actually quite sad and upsetting. And I think that's the root cause, I think, of a lot of the, you know, why are you asking that question? You know, let me Google this for you, and those kinds of things, right?
I actually think people in cybersecurity, we need to share more because like you learn from that, right? You share your story, share your experience, what you've done well, what you've not done so well. But people are quite like, actually, I don't want to share that with you. I want to keep that as close to my chest as possible, which doesn't actually help anyone.
Well, here's the problem. The bad actors, they're all collaborating. They're all working together. They're talking, they're sharing. And I heard a great metaphor from Game of Thrones, and I don't acknowledge the last season, but there's a scene where they're talking about armies and Robert Baratheon, who is the king of Westeros, he basically is giving a metaphor. He said, yes, we have five armies, five fingers, but they're not operating together. We're going up against one army and the fist always beats the open palm. Right. And I just thought that was a great metaphor. And that I think is a lot of what we are going up against. So, all right. So before we jump in, I think, Joe, maybe if you want to do 60, 90 seconds on your background, because I think it's actually quite interesting and somewhat unique. And then we'll jump into our movie segment.
I have spent the last 10 years working in recruitment, headhunting, you know, executive search, whatever fancy name you want to call it. For the last six of those has been in cybersecurity, so helping FTSE 100, Fortune 500 organizations recruit senior level positions within cybersecurity. So very much at the executive level, CISO, director and management roles within that. More recently, I'm going to be moving away from that, I'm going to be building my own product for the leadership space, which I'm really excited about. And I keep an eye out for it. I won't go into too much detail now because it'll end up taking over the podcast. But
right. Yeah. Well, you and I talked a little bit briefly about that when we did our pre-chat. So I'm actually really excited about that. For those of you out there, you may or may not have picked up on the fact Joe actually is not from the United States. He has a little bit of an accent. So I think it's nice because Joe brings some global perspective, because I think one of the things we talked about, the market for security leaders in the US is very different than in the UK, which is in turn different than the EU and, you know, LATAM and APAC and all that. So I think the global view is always interesting. And we're eagerly waiting. For those of you that are on LinkedIn, you absolutely should follow Joe. Joe posts some really, really good stuff, very, very well thought out, and not sort of, some people put, like I tend to post very shorter things. Joe like really put some thought into that. And it's definitely worthwhile and get some great engagement. So definitely follow Joe.
Thank you very much. You're making me blush.
Yes. Oh, no, don't do that. Yeah, it's funny. I had a friend of mine on a while ago, George Alcora. You know, he said some super nice things about me at the end, and I reached out. And, you know, I've been around a while. And he said, dude, I'm impressed you even know who I am. right? And I think we all have this sort of imposter syndrome and underinflated view of ourselves. It's always nice to have other people go, hey, you know, that thing you said, really smart. I like that. So there we go. Okay, so movie question. All right, so I got one. What movie is the story of a fish out of water kind of thing, right? So someone finds them in a situation where they have never been before. They're uncomfortable. They are forced to confront. Maybe it's a little bit of a hero's journey story. We've talked about that on the podcast before. So name a movie and talk about how it sort of resonated with you. And then I'll share mine and we'll go from there.
Good question. So my movie, think of a movie that's really resonated with me. And I think one of the ones is The Pursuit of Happiness. I'm not sure for anyone that's not seen that, it's played by Will Smith and he effectively loses everything in his life. So, you know, he's got no job, he's got like no family, he's got nowhere to live. The only thing he's got is his son. And I think that really resonates with me, and maybe more like this time in my life, certainly, is because actually it makes you realize how important it is to fail and fail forward, which everyone talks about. And also like understanding that like you need resilience. And I think especially in cybersecurity, like that's one of the biggest things you need, is not just a resilience from like a business perspective, but also like your soft skills and who you are, you need to be resilient as well.
That is a great choice. And that was a great movie, sad, poignant. And then he does go on to actually be very, very successful. And this is Will Smith pre-slap. But we don't have to go there. So I think that's a great choice. So mine is a slightly different sort of take. I am a big Lord of the Rings fan. And my fish out of water is Samwise Gamgee. You know, he's a young hobbit. He's a gardener. And there is a very strong case, and I agree with it, that Sam is actually the hero of Lord of the Rings. And he is constantly confronted by things he doesn't know anything about. He meets elves for the first time, and he meets dwarves for the first time, and he's under the shadow of this horrible, horrible evil. And he always manages to sort of look at the bright side and be the voice of, I don't want to say the voice of reason, but the voice of calmness. And even when Frodo feels like he's sort of going over the edge, Sam is there. And I think you could stop short of saying that it's a spoiler because the books are like 80 years old at this point now. But the fact that when he thinks Frodo is dead at the, I almost said hands of Shelob, but it's, I guess, the claws, he picks up the mantle and he just forges on. And I just think he is a true hero to me.
You said Lord of the Rings. I can't believe you said Lord of the Rings, because Lord of the Rings is like one of my most favoriteest trilogies ever. And I'm really annoyed that you thought of it. We're definitely going to be friends now. It's literally one of my favoriteest film sets in the world. So good choice.
So let's talk a little bit about cyber, about the job environment, about CISOs. I actually had a call earlier this morning with a very old friend of mine. She's not old, but we've been friends a long time. And she's been out of the market for a little while. And she's like, I'm looking for a CISO job. And I got to tell you, you couldn't pay me enough money to be a CISO these days. The pressure, the accountability. What are some of the trends that you're seeing amongst your CISO clients, among people who want to be that, to maybe not scare them away like I might have just?
Yeah, I think there's two sides to it. So I think if you are an organization, so at the moment, like businesses, you know, I still think we're extremely in our infancy, right, around what cybersecurity is, what it's about. Like organizations are just like, they don't really know. And so we're still kind of in this limbo at the moment, and businesses are trying to learn, what does a CISO do? What can they bring to the organization? I also think there's like this added pressure at the moment. So a lot of the CISOs I speak with, and a lot of people who I turn to for advice and kind of mentorship of myself, like they all say, like, we're just doing so much more. Like, it isn't just security anymore. It's like, we're doing legal, we're doing operations, we're like now doing HR, we're dealing with third parties. It's just like a list that seems to get longer and longer and longer every week. I'm not sure whether or not people are scared off by the CISO role, and maybe it's different in the US than it is the UK. And that's probably because of a lot of the recent kind of happenings in the US with, you know, the Uber case, the Cloudflare case as well. there's a different culture, I think, around the role of CISO than there is in the UK. So I actually think there's quite a lot of aspiration still in the UK to be a CISO. And that's a really kind of pivotal point in someone's journey. Whereas what I've heard is in the US is that actually people are like, I don't really want to do that role anymore. There's way too much like personal liability within it. It's too much pressure. I'm actually just going to do something else, which is quite sad, right? Because it's a really, really rewarding, quite fulfilling industry. And if you are, you know, if once you become a CISO, you can make so much change and affect so much change, but it's sad to think people are like being turned away from it.
I agree. And I definitely do see a cultural thing. We had one of our previous guests was Jason Ozen from PIB Insurance.
And, I know Jason, yeah.
I love Jason because Jason is very much a tell it like it is kind of person. He says stuff that I would like to be able to say, but I'm afraid of, but he very outspoken. I really love that. But his whole thing is, you know, he settled into a role where he knew when he walked in the door that he had management support. And I don't think a lot of CISOs sort of get that. And I think a lot of it's a communication gap. I think that our executives know it's important. I don't always think they know why. And I don't think we do a great job of helping them understand that, right? So when you're working with companies that are looking to hire a security executive, I won't even use the word CISO because not everyone gets that title, but how do you advise them on creating job descriptions so that they're not overly technical and are not going to come in and start, you know, shaking the tree, which I think we can all agree is probably not a great way to start. So how do you advise hiring companies to figure out what it is they want, right? You talked about, you know, what does a CISO do? So how do you help people figure that out on the buying side, essentially?
Yeah, and it's a really good question. And actually, I've actually had it in the past where I've gone into these conversations and you do actually realize that what someone wants, they can't have necessarily. And there's always that disparity around, okay, well, what does the salary look like? You know, well, we want a CISO, but we want to pay 50% less than market rate. So for instance, you know, if I take the UK and a good CISO salary in the UK for a good high level senior role is probably about £200,000. You've got companies here in the UK that are saying, well, I want a CISO for £80,000. And so what you start to realize is that actually you might want that, but you can't have that. That's not realistic because actually your, you know, budgets are important to think about. You know, you can't suddenly go from, well, we've got a headcount of 80,000 for one person. You're not going to suddenly get another 120,000 on top of that to hire a CISO. So we kind of have that side of it where actually it's just a case of going, look, actually you don't need this right now. We're going to steer you away from this and steer you from what you think you want to what you actually need in this moment in time. And that's a really important thing because not every organization needs a CISO. It isn't suddenly you go and hire this person and all your security problems have disappeared and, you know, you've got a really good security culture. Like, it's actually so much more than that, as we know. I think the other thing as well is, so when we get a client that is really, you know, they want a CISO, they understand that actually it isn't just about security. It's about you're hiring a chief level, a C-level individual who can help drive the business forward. And when you start to communicate to them that actually this isn't just about delivering security initiatives, this is about ensuring that the initiatives also are helping hit business objectives. So I think as long as, and this is what, you know, this is what I always do is kind of say, actually, what's your high level business objectives? Because if you can't understand why you're bringing in this CISO and why they're important to hit those business objectives, there's probably no point in hiring that person. Otherwise, it's just a big, massive cost that you're going to look at and go, we're just throwing money away at this person that isn't actually helping us and we don't understand why. So back to your point, it's always about understanding why.
And I think that's a terrific point because I don't feel like people always ask that question. I'm a big fan of asking why. Sometimes you got to ask why more than once to get where you need to go. But I do think that's important. And so you said something I just want to kind of pull back to. You said not every organization needs a CISO. Mm. So I'm going to push back a little bit there. Maybe they don't need that Uber CISO, but I think every organization needs someone to be in charge of the cybersecurity function, right?
I think, yeah, it's and I guess we'd have to define what in charge of means, because in charge of could be, okay, well, here's the money and you get the freedom to do what you want with security and here it is, go and do it. If you're an organization of like 50 people, you don't necessarily need the high level CISO, right? You're not going to have a huge budget for security. You might just need someone who's a information security officer or manager who isn't that executive level individual, but that can, they're not necessarily going to be someone that's going to deliver on lots of things and execute on lots of programs because they haven't got the experience to do that. But they're certainly going to be there to get you through a period of your growth or the for the size of organization you are. I think I've seen it before where small 50 person companies are saying, well, we need to hire a CISO.
Okay. All right. That's a fair point, which I we're back in agreement there. So what I'm reminded of is I believe it was CIO Online maybe 15 or more years ago put out an article, it's still available, where they really talked about the fact that there's three kinds of CISOs, right? So there's the corporate global CISO, there's the BISO, the business unit information security officer, which we've seen a big uptick, especially in finance. And then there's the TISO, the technical information security officer. And I think that analysis is still very appropriate, right? To your point, not every organization needs that, you know, big giant CISO. Some people, to your point, really need someone to implement, and I'm going to be very simplistic, implement firewalls and patching.
Yeah. Yeah. A policymaker as well, right? Someone just to create policies and get them to a stage where actually they've got some security rather than nothing, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Because I do think they're, thankfully, it's few and far between, but there are still a lot of companies out there that don't have any kind of a security program. And they figure, oh, well, who's coming after me? And my answer is, you know what? If you're along the wall and somebody throws something at the wall, seeing what sticks, you may get hit. We actually just recently did an assessment of our ransomware data. We have a lot of data we've collected. And what we found is companies that are between $10 and $100 million, they are the ones that are being victimized the most by ransomware these days. Why? Because they probably don't have any kind of a security program to speak of. And you know, you talked about budget a few minutes ago. If I'm a small company and you tell me, well, I could spend $100,000, pounds, euros on a CISO, or I could put that in the salespeople's hands and they go out and sell product, that's probably the way most companies are going to go. Mm-hmm.
So I've got a question for you then, which would be an interesting one. What makes a CISO a CISO?
So I think this is where you and I are in very, very strong agreement. I believe that the soft skills are significantly more important than the technical skills. And this is maybe the snippiest sort of engagements we see. If I take someone who knows how to communicate and knows how to build a story and knows how to engage with different stakeholders and learn other people's perspectives, I can teach them enough security to manage a team. The flip side, I don't think is the case. And we see it, right, all the time. The way I actually met Jason, who we talked about, was some guy on LinkedIn who's a 5-time CISO said, and he said this out loud, my job is to protect the organization's data. And I went, that is not your job. That's not your job. It's just not. I believe that being able to engage with business stakeholders, I think being able to have a risk conversation rather than a threat conversation, I think is the hallmark of what I see as a good CISO. And to your point, smaller organizations, they're going to need someone who's going to be more technical, because in that case, the CISO, with or without the title, is probably going to be rolling up the sleeves programming firewalls.
Yeah. So do you think then, because I've always wondered this, and I wondered if there was some sort of like framework or system that you could follow where it was, okay, you are X number of heads with X amount of turnover in a certain industry. So are there like, you'll sort of like plot it on a graph where you would link up turnover to headcount and it would tell you whether or not you needed a CISO type role? Because I think what I've certainly seen it is where you get these smaller companies that are less than 10 million turnover, 50 person headcount, and they hire someone with 3 years experience and call them a CISO. Well, the person in that job is thinking, this is brilliant. I get the CISO job title. You know, I'm 3 years in, I've already achieved it. But that type of person is so different to the FTSE 100, Fortune 500 company. And I'm wondering if there's some sort of way you can do some sort of equation on it, and it would, you could work out whether or not you needed a proper CISO or not.
That's a great question. And that maybe you and I should set up some follow-up time. We could talk about that sort of when we're not being recorded. But I think that's part of it. But I also think, are you in a regulated industry? If you are, then maybe you get an extra bump. I think if you have a lot of regulated data, I think if you're dealing with customer data, I think if you have intellectual property, those are all going to be things. But I do think that your premise that starting with the size of the company and the headcount, that's an interesting way to get started. That may be something we could talk about going forward. Everyone needs someone to at least be in charge of that, right? To go to the business and say, hey, by the way, you need to do this. And I think otherwise what you end up happening is, and I don't know if you get these phone calls, but I typically get phone calls from friends of mine who go, hey, we just got hit with ransomware. What do we do? Right? Like, buddy of mine runs a plumbing supply place. Their ERP system got hit with ransomware. He's like, what do we do? I go, I would pay the ransom, figure out how they got it and move on. Right? They don't have any kind of a security program because they're selling plumbing. They think they don't need one, but clearly there is exposure there. So I do think that we unfortunately are seeing a bit of an uptick, at least in the US, on people that have 2 or 3 years experience who are willing to step into that role for not the sort of market dollars, pounds, euros. And I think they figure, well, you know what, I'll do the job. And then even if I stink at the job, I now have CISO on my resume and now I can move in. I tell people all the time, within reason, if you're asking me to choose a title versus money, the title is not a bad way to go, especially when you're early in your career.
Maybe I'm in two minds about it. Like, yes, it's great for the individual, you get the job title, but then for the rest of the market, I feel like it then devalues what everyone else is trying to achieve. And then if you've got someone with 3 years experience who's just gone into a smaller organization, has called themselves CISO, but you've got someone who's worked for 15 years and has only just achieved that, where's the balance? You know, there is, you've got to get the balance right. And we have to have some sort of structure with how job roles and job titles work. Because if we don't, how can we encourage people into the industry? How can we set kind of career paths? How can we set goals for people and really show people that actually this is the trajectory you're on? If actually it's so easy now to go and go, well, actually, I've been doing it 3 years, I've got the C-level title, I'm going to go and ask for a £200,000-£250,000 base.
Yeah. And the other thing that we're seeing sort of in parallel to that is this whole like virtual CISO market, fractional CISO. And I had a spirited conversation with my friend, George Alcura, and his whole thing was, I don't think that's even a thing. And I pushed back and I said, look, man, most companies want George, but can't afford George and can't find George. Well, they need something. And I think that's where kind of the virtual CISO comes in. The problem is, I'm seeing a lot of people you're talking about, which are like, I'm a security engineer. I can't get a job as a CISO, but I can go hang out a shingle as a virtual CISO. And I think those folks are sort of blackening the eye a little bit on that whole market. And I don't know if you work with folks like in APAC, but in Japan, for example, there are very, very, very few CISOs. There are plenty of people that have that job, but don't have that title. And, you know, you mentioned some of the comp for CISOs in the UK. I can tell you that number is significantly lower than what we're seeing in the US. Now, there are a lot of other things involved there with insurance and medical care and all those things. But we're seeing CISO comp actually start to drop a little bit. And you and I may have actually had this exchange. I think because the market's gotten tighter or looser rather, I think companies think it's an opportunity to get a bargain basement CISO. And I think that's a huge mistake.
Yeah, massively, massively, right? I think on the comp side, yeah. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but the way the US is at the moment with kind of some of the salaries and all the legalities and, you know, around kind of personal liability and insurances and things, do you think what will happen, there'll be CISOs now will have shorter tenures. So, you know, naturally, you know, the longer you stay in post, the more risk there is, right? You know, and that continues to go on. So do you think now what we'll see is CISOs hanging around for like 12 months and being like, right, I'm done 12 months, I'm out, because the longer I stay, I know I'm more at risk.
The average tenure for a CISO is really just over 2 years and hasn't budged much over the last long time. But that's a great question. And I think a lot of that is a culture and an organization thing. one of our colleagues on LinkedIn was actually talking about looking for work down in Australia. And the general consensus, and I have a couple of friends that have been looking down there, is down there at least, those companies don't really want to see. So they want someone with a title who's going to sit in the corner and be quiet.
Right. Okay.
And that is a significant disservice. You know, I don't want to say those markets are less mature because I don't really think they are, but that is an immature approach.
I think definitely from a maturity perspective, from what I've seen, certainly the US leads. The US leads with maturity, and I would probably say the UK is a good second. If you compare that to the rest of Europe, we're getting better in the UK. I still think we've got like a lot to learn, and I think we can take a lot of the lessons that you guys in the US have and that you do, and some of the practices that you have, and actually implement them here. I don't know how long that's going to be until we catch up. Probably a long, long time, because every time I feel like we're two steps forward, we take one step backwards. You know, like these crazy job descriptions you've seen, you know, CISOs. I've seen, like, I think I, one of the craziest wild things I saw was like a CISO role reporting into a director of security, because they just had to have the title within the organizational structure. And it was like, what? Like, and that's just complete arrogance, right? And saying, well, we don't want to learn about it. And that's what I struggle the most with, is that businesses don't want to learn. You know, if you don't know something, you've never done something before, surely you should go and do your research, go and learn about it. But what we see is that people go on LinkedIn and look at Glassdoor and go on Google and take their advice from that, rather than actually speaking to the industry, people like you, people like myself, right, lots of other people out there that can really advise them, you know, and actually doing their research.
It's interesting that you say that the US is more mature, because here's been my take. I think the US may be more mature with cybersecurity, but I think we are less mature when it comes to technology risk management. I think that the UK and the EU, I think, have been doing a better job around the concept of risk for a long time. It's actually interesting that you articulate it that way, because, like, so I've presented all over the world, and you could tell from the questions you get after you get off stage. And my experience, at least in London, is where the conference I used to present at, is that Europe, I think, is more mature about risk and less mature maybe about cybersecurity. Mm. And that's an interesting disconnect there, right? Because ultimately, the business cares about risk, don't much care about cybersecurity.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, because I've always, I guess, when I look at the people and I've worked with in the US and the companies in the US, is that they have a better understanding maybe of what a CISO can do for the wider business. There seems to be a better understanding around, actually, we understand that bringing this person isn't just security, it's a bigger role than that, and they can help us hit business objectives. And I don't know whether that's just the people I've spoke to or whether that is a true reflection. What do you think?
Yeah, like, I think we always have these sort of self-selecting sample sizes that we then make assumptions based on. I think the fact that they're reaching out to you indicates they know they have a need and that you can help them fill that need. I think that the people you're not talking to don't recognize that, and they're trying to find their own way. And I think they're, you know, looking for people, you know, via LinkedIn. I don't know about you, but I constantly get reach outs on LinkedIn going, hey, I have a security engineer job that would be perfect for you. No, you don't. Because if you looked at my background, you would know I am not the security engineer that you want.
So right? It's so funny you say that. So I get it from the other side, which is like something I've been wanting to talk about and not necessarily hadn't known the way to speak about it until now. But I get so many recruiters send me CVs as if I am a CISO. So, like, I not only now do I, like, I've completely sympathized with everyone that's had that over the years of doing their jobs, where they just get random CVs and now here's a candidate doing this. And again, you know, in the UK, the recruitment culture is maybe slightly different to the US, but I cannot believe that there is just like complete lack of, I don't want to say intelligence, because that sounds really harsh, but like just a complete lack of business understanding, that business maturity. Like, I'm obviously not a CISO. I don't hire people in that space, and yet I get, you know, sent CVs all the time, much like you would get those jobs that have no bearing on what you actually do.
I think a lot of it, I think is laziness. I think people just don't look. I mean, I get vendors reaching out to me all the time going, hey, you want to buy our solution? I go, did you look at what we do at Black Kite? Because we are a competitor of yours and I'm not buying your product. And then sometimes they get indignant when you go, did you look at my background before you wasted my time? Every once in a while, I'll have 5 free minutes where I'll engage, but usually I just delete them.
That's a whole nother podcast, right? Talking about that problem.
Yeah. it's super frustrating. Okay. So what are some tips you would give to somebody who is, maybe they're an engineer or administrator, a couple years out of university to become a CISO one day?
Okay. Probably three things that initially come to mind. The first one is, we've kind of touched on it already, is understand the business. How do security initiatives link into business objectives? That's the simplest way I can put it. I've spoken to so many people on this. It's not just about what the business does. It's about how they generate revenue, who their customer base are, what are their strategic plans, what are their goals, what are the locations of the organization. This is all information that you should know so that when you come to demonstrate your skills, you understand why your skills can fit into those objectives. So that's the first one. The second one is understand how to communicate your value. I think sometimes we have a really, really hard time communicating value and the value we bring, but I absolutely genuinely believe that anyone can go into an organization and give it a really good crack at the value they bring to that business. And again, it's all about showing your why, showing how your skills fit into the business. So really, really learn and build a value proposition. So whether you're looking for a pay rise or a promotion in your current role, or you're interviewing for a new role, really, really understand where your value proposition comes from. And the third thing, again, which we touched on really, really at the beginning of this conversation, was like, just post a little bit about your journey, like become a thought leader. Some of the best people I know of and in the CISO space, they're posting their thoughts, they're writing blogs, they're doing what you're doing right now, Jeffrey, which is the podcast, and really just sharing their opinions. You'll be amazed at the power that actually just sharing some daily thoughts or your journey on like LinkedIn, for instance, at what that actually can do for your career. Those three things would be kind of my top tips, I guess.
Your value is not what you do. Your value is what your audience gets. I've seen a bunch of CVs and it's like, okay, so you've managed every technology on the planet. What happened? Did you save money? Did the company make money? Did you have less breaches? And I don't think people get there. So I think that's a great tip.
There'll be some bits actually in the product I'm building, which I've created a framework for how you can demonstrate your value. I called it the Cybersecurity Value Demonstration Framework, which breaks down how you can show value in any situation. So it's a massive part of your job, right, as a future leader.
So a couple of kind of key takeaways that I had, and then I'll hand it back to you for any final thoughts. So I think you asked a question which drove some interesting conversation, which is, what does a CISO do? And I'm going to build on that. What does a CISO not do? And I think those are two great questions. People don't like to ask negative questions, but I do think, what shouldn't we do? What don't we do? I think is a great way to start. You made a great observation, which is something that I have been seeing too, which is the role is expanding, right? I always say cybersecurity is only one aspect of risk, one facet, but it has an outsized impact on everything else. You get hit with ransomware, you can't pay your bills, you can't fulfill on contracts, you can't hire people, et cetera. And then this is a key takeaway, which is some companies just can't afford what they want. And I think they need to be realistic about their expectations. Maybe it's bringing in a senior engineer and then bringing in a consultant to help you build out the program. And then your three tips for wannabe CISOs, and I agree with them all 100%, which is make sure you can have a business conversation. The second thing is about the value communication. And I love the third one about talking about your journey, sharing lessons. There's too much gatekeeping out there. And I think everyone feels like they need to be perfect. I'm a big fan as a leader of opening my raincoat and admitting, hey, I made a mistake. Here's what we learned from that. People call me an expert and I don't like that. I am an experienced practitioner. All that means is I've been doing this a long time and I've had the opportunity to make a lot more mistakes than the average person. All right. So Joe, I want to thank you for your time. Any last snippets, thoughts, wisdoms And again, you can follow Joe on LinkedIn. He's got cool stuff that goes out there virtually every day. Any last thoughts before we go on our merry way?
I guess for anyone that like is listening, that like is unsure about leadership and security, like we need you, right? Like that's it. Like we need more leaders. We need more people pushing the boundaries of what we can do in cybersecurity. And we need more people like challenging businesses, getting more budget, building bigger teams, because ultimately all of that good stuff is going to benefit everybody else. And that you're not alone, right? There are so many people that are going through the same thing as you within security leadership. So like reach out to people, network with people. But yeah, we need more leaders.
I always felt like I was bothering people when I reached out to them, but it actually turns out people want to talk and they want to share and they want to learn. So I love that. So, all right. Excellent, Joe. So today's guest was Joe Head, CISO coach and mentor. Definitely follow Joe on LinkedIn. He posts some really good stuff and he gets really good engagement and you know, check out the people that are commenting and liking Joe's stuff. So with that, I want to thank everyone for joining us on today's episode of Risk and Reels. Make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss all of our future guests. We have some great guests coming up. So with that, stay safe, stay healthy, stay secure. Wheatman out.
Thank you for listening to Risk and Reels, a cybersecurity podcast. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to riveting 30-minute conversation about movies and cybersecurity. Jeffrey will be on the road this year at some of the industry's biggest events, but you can always find him on LinkedIn and Twitter at Jeffrey Wheatman. This podcast is powered by Blackkite, the only security rating service to deliver the highest quality intelligence to help organizations make better risk decisions.